presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense excitement, pounding action, and spine-tingling mystery.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Dorks. This is Comic Dorks episode 15. We talk about comics and related comic material. I don't like the word material. I'll have to change that up. It's episode 15 for, December 10th, 2013. It's been about a month and some, 2 months. Yeah, no,
too long.
Not quite. Too long is the answer. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But it's good to be back. We're here with you. We're excited to be here. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined tonight by Mark Spagg. Hello, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm fine, man. It's good to have you back. Steven Schleicher right over there.
Hello.
I don't know why that thing's playing something. Let me kill that. And of course, the formidable Scott Kurtz. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
You like being called formidable?
Sure.
All right, fine. He's a formidable force in comics, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And we got
better
stuff
than
to say.
Impotent.
That's true. That's very true. Let's get right into it.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed, along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate it.
All right. Let's get straight to the meat. Let's get to the meat whistle. What? I don't know what that is.
Oh, man.
Gal, I don't know why I even said that. It's got nothing to do with what I'm about to tell you. I saw something on TV yesterday. Oh, and there's my daughter. Hi. Don't worry about that word. See you later. Talk to you later. Okay.
Don't look at the meat whistle.
Wonder Woman, cast for the upcoming DC Universe film, the Zack Snyder epic, the opus, the follow-up to Man of Steel, which we all loved dearly.
A great flick.
Yeah, it was a hell of a deal.
I used to like it until I came on this show.
it makes you think, doesn't it? It makes you think. And now my wife, because she's sweet and innocent, doesn't know any better. She went and bought the big Blu-ray package thing of that and brought that downstairs. And it's got the hologram where you can move it and it looks like Superman 1 second and it looks like Zod the next second. And kids are kind of excited and I'm like, oh, okay, fine. We'll watch it again. Let's see if I was either tainted by hype or if maybe this much time later I can watch it again and see parts of this movie that I thought I'd like better this time around or something or whatever. Maybe this will be an easier experience. And I turned it on, and the exact same issues prevail. I still think that the lack of attention to all that collateral damage is a huge mistake in that movie, and I have a real hard time with it. But all that being said, and you guys at home, you know how we feel, most of us. Wonder Woman, cast, the next big Batman Superman business. Her name is Gal Gadot.
I think Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot. Gadot. I'm going to go with Gadot. Is that that's not an Israeli name, is it? Gadot? Because I know she's an Israeli lady. She's a model there, or used to be.
Yeah.
Got into acting and all that. And she's most known for her role in the most recent couple Fast and Furious movies. In fact, I got a little, let me give you a little taste of what she sounds like. This is Gal Gadot talking to the one dude from the Tokyo Drift guy. I don't know his name. I'm not nearly into these Fast and Furious movies like some people.
It'd be funny if you play it and the clip goes, we got to get fast and furious.
And furious. So here it is. Let's just hear what she sounds like. Here you go.
I got out of the military.
Huh?
Probably at the same time you quit smoking.
Huh?
The amount of chips you eat? The way you always have to keep your hands and mouth busy?
Huh?
You were a two-pack-a-day man, for sure.
All right. I don't know who that other guy was.
She sounds familiar to me.
It took me a second to realize that wasn't in the actual movie.
It was just Scott Kurtz in the theater.
Huh?
He's just trying to figure out what's going on.
Huh?
Huh? What? So she's pretty. She's easy on the eyes. She has a cool accent. I think she looks... she got a great face for Wonder Woman, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think, Steven, about the casting generally, and why is the internet so pissed about it?
I don't know. People are crazy.
The internet.
You can't make anyone happy. I think that's the thing that we can take away from this, because everyone's been screaming for months, years, decades now. We need a Wonder Woman in a movie. We need a Wonder Woman movie. And Warner Brothers comes out and says, okay, here's Wonder Woman. We're going to put her in this and then we'll give her our own movie. We're still not happy with that. No. Oh, you picked the wrong person.
She's too skinny is the general thing.
Yeah,
she's not buff enough, is what I
don't know. Adriana Pilecki, I think most people are concerned that her breasts are not big enough. I think that's what it boils down to.
Oh, man.
Nothing Adriana, you can do about
remember
that.
Remember Adriana Pilecki?
Yeah.
She's not well endowed either, but put her in a Wonder Woman costume. In the clips that we saw and the pictures that we saw, she looked fine.
Yeah, she looked fine. That's the thing. My problem with Wonder Woman has never been how sexy is she. I don't care about that. What I care about is how good is the characterization as compared to her best moments in comics. How tough is she? How strong-willed is she? How much about right is she? And these sorts of things. I don't really care. I know a lot of people do, and in the end, I don't want to see Cloris Leachman up there in the outfit, rocking and rolling in that thing or anything. But you know,
what about Phyllis Diller?
You're getting closer. You're getting closer.
You know, she was in the. Did you say that on purpose, or were you just trying to make a joke?
What, was Cloris Leachman in something?
She was Diana's mom in the series.
What, Cloris Leachman was? What,
in the pilot?
I didn't know that.
The queen, yeah.
Are you
very? If only there were a podcast that looked at pilots of episodes of television.
Well, no, it could, but
young Cloris.
Well, it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been the pilot from what's her name? What's her name? Lee? I can't think of her name.
Kathy Lee Crosby.
Yeah, it had to be the Linda Carter.
Carter, sir.
Right.
No,
in the pilot. In the pilot.
The real pilot was not Linda Carter. Was the other chick, the 2-hour pilot that they scrapped and started over from. But I think you're right. I'm looking it up. Damn, dude. I had no idea. That was not my intent.
Yeah,
look at me.
That you say that.
Wonder Woman, 1975, one episode, the pilot of the second pilot of the second series, which became the series we all know. She was Wonder Woman's mom. Wow. And she's been a billion other things and lots of other stuff, but yeah. She's fantastic.
I tell you, the problem I have with it is not the casting, because I mean, come on. I mean, this is just Affleck all over again, right? Give him, you can't crap on it until you see how it's going to work out.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think these guys have made enough movies to know how to take an actress and make her a convincing Wonder Woman. The problem is that I wasn't excited about this movie when it was going to be Batman versus Superman. Mm. Now it's going to be Batman versus Superman versus Wonder Woman versus Doomsday versus.
Oh yeah. Oh,
they're talking Flash. They're talking Green Lantern. They're talking Martian Manhunter.
Cram a Justice League movie in here.
Yeah. Would you rather them be just straight up making a Justice League movie instead of essentially, well, like you said, cramming it in? Square peg, round hole kind of thing?
They might be able to do it well. Again, it's one of those things where I don't think most people need to be told the origin of Superman or the origin of Batman or the origin of Wonder Woman again. If you're going to cram in secondary characters like the Flash and stuff, maybe people do need it explained, but at this point, I mean, it's really a matter of whether or not the movie, you know, an hour and a half movie can be good. If it's, I mean, what could they possibly explore? What could be explored other than we've got to get our Avengers in as fast as possible? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I think that is what they have to do, right? They're not going to tell us how. They're not going to be, my parents were shot, Batman, and they're not going to do any of those origin stories. And I think you've gone long enough without telling a public mainstream Wonder Woman story that you could say she fell out of a dumpster in the Bronx and bonked her head on a homeless guy and it gave her powers, and people would probably believe it. Because at some point, we've not seen anything of her. But even then, you know who she is, you know what her business is, you know what she's supposed to be doing, and kind of her basic power set and her role within the league and all that. I think they just hit the ground running and kill Jason Momoa, who is rumored to be Doomsday at the moment or something, right, Steven?
Yeah. I don't know. They've talked Martian Manhunter. They've talked Doomsday. I would like to see him as Darkseid. Someone mentioned Aquaman. Who knows?
Aquaman would work. It'd be a little more Namor, Prince Namor, than Aquaman, but... Mark, you excited about the prospect of, I don't know, this lady? And then we talk all the time about whether or not these movies are going to be good, and we don't know. And Scott's right. We'll crap on it until we see. But I mean, it feels like a non-starter to me. She seems fine.
I'm just excited about her in general.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with the movie.
Right. You're just generally aroused by by this lady. Gotcha.
You know, I'm always interested in watching the two strategies of like the big two as they bring their characters to the movies, because it does seem like DC's doing a little bit of catch up here, and her role in this movie could be absolutely minimal, just to kind of test the water and then branch her out into her own movie afterwards, kind of going backwards from the way Marvel's approaching it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. My worry is that maybe that rushing that process, trying to catch up, is just going to screw it up because it's not allowing the audience to get to know each of them individually, then bringing them together. Mm-hmm. You know, or it just seems like they're making an attempt to pull these other characters in to test the waters and see if they want to go and split them out later.
It also feels like DC may have spent too much time, let's say, from 2000 until 2008. Paying too much attention to watching Marvel fail at trying to get their characters to work. They'd succeed with Fox and X-Men a little bit here, and then they'd kind of do miserably with the Fantastic Four over there, and then they kind of did okay, but then Spider-Man was like, whoa, Spider-Man's huge, but then, you know, their attempts with the first Hulk attempt was kind of lousy and so on. And you get to Iron Man, and suddenly it's like, oh, wait, now they're getting it. Shoot, we have to play catch-up. Yep. They don't have the benefit now of some of those early ugly years of trying to figure it out during this era of superhero movies, and now they have to. You're right; they have to play catch up, and it's a weird thing, but I can kind of feel it.
Well, I hope that they have everything kind of lined up because shooting begins next month for this thing.
Jeez,
wow. Or at least some of the early. I mean, we already know that they've shot some stuff back in October. They shot a football game between Gotham High and Smallville Central or whatever. But they're already beginning production and shooting a lot of stuff on this. And I hope that they're just not, hey, let's add another 2 pages onto this and slap Aquaman in here. And, oh, hey, let's get that guy that changes shape and put him in there. Yeah. I really hope that that's not what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something interesting about this lady. As I was reading my copy of Jewish Journal of Los Angeles, which well, everyone
you subscribe,
does, right?
Do you get that?
Of course I do.
In the mail? Great.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
But I'm reading this article, and it's talking about why Jews are actually really excited about this prospect. Obviously, she's an Israeli Jew. Mm-hmm. She's actually ex-Israeli military.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when people are talking about her toughness, I mean, yeah, she's thin, but in the proper situation, she's clearly got the chops. If she was in the military, she knows her stuff. But the Jewish community, just in general, according to this article,
right,
is very happy to see a Israeli Jew playing a role, even though this movie probably isn't going to touch on this stuff. But the original introduction of Wonder Woman and sort of the anti-Nazi thing that she was brought about as a character for,
yeah,
is kind of compelling to people who of Jewish.
So they've got that sort of ethnic bent that's even more
totally
exciting for them.
Yeah,
it's interesting kind of cool. Because isn't it? I mean, if I learned anything from Why the Last Man, it's that all the women are trained to be military tough ladies.
Well, everyone who's Israeli has to do service in the military. Same way in China,
yeah,
you have to do military service.
And it really was a shocker in that comic book for me to go, oh man, that's the smart thing to do. Because if all the dudes were wiped out, as far-fetched as that may seem, they've got a very clear strategic advantage, militarily speaking, right?
Totally. I mean,
over us, for sure. I mean, nothing wrong with our ladies. I'm just saying, you're not as tough. You're not,
man.
You're not doing mandatory years long training with a gun and in the dirt and stuff. That's all.
I'm not touching that.
Oh man, leave them hanging.
It's all right. ComicDorks@gmail.com. Yeah,
you know, beyond just Wonder Woman in here and the character that's playing it, I think what people are really, really wanting is a standalone Wonder Woman movie. And why do we have to cram her into this? Maybe even as just a cameo. Why can't she stand on her own? And I think really what it boils down to is people just want a really good story overall. Mm. And if Warner Brothers can deliver a really good story, I think it won't matter whether Ben Affleck is Batman, whether Jason Momoa is Plastic Man or Lobo. Mark, Scott, I think you said that a couple of days ago.
Lobo would be all right. Yeah.
I think if you can give somebody and give the audiences a story that is really good and doesn't seem forced, I think everything will be fine.
So Goyer still writing it though? Is that?
I don't remember who's writing it. Yeah, I think
Scott
so.
Knows and I'm
he is super hit or miss. On this.
Yeah, so. And he's been very specifically miss for a lot of us in a Superman movie, which is this is a direct sequel to. So I'm nervous about it. I know things can improve though. Sequels are always Empire Strikes Back proved it. This new Desolation of Smog deal is seeming to prove it, at least critically anyway. Better received in the first film and so on. So maybe. I still hold out hope. Of course, I'm going to see it. But, there's just so much to be let down on the last one. And then this is so ambitious on the surface anyway. We're bringing in Wonder Woman. And we talked a little bit, Stephen, the other day on TMS about hopefully them not trying to wedge in a romantic triangle thing here.
Yeah, Amy Adams, who plays Lois Lane in the movie, had said that if there's a romantic triangle, she really hopes that it's not antagonistic between Lois and Wonder Woman and Superman. She hopes it's one of these things where the girls can team up and kick some ass and do some cool things.
Yeah. Maybe I'm not going to say what I was going to say. Scott, do you think all this is much, this is much ado about nothing, because who cares at this point until we see it? I don't know why, but I feel that whenever we talk about Superman, there's a weird, I feel a weird heat through the internet coming from Washington State, and it's from you, because I know you hated that movie so much, but you seem to be on a pretty, I don't know, open-minded path toward what they're doing. You're a little concerned they're mashing it all in too fast, or they're trying to make a Justice League movie before its time. Those all seem like reasonable concerns, but isn't there just underneath all of that some hot lava just waiting to come out and engulf us all, or what?
Oh, I don't know what you want from me. Oh my god. These assholes don't know how to write. We already know. They've shown us they don't know what the fuck they're doing with these characters.
Yeah.
And it's just like the movie ends. We walk out of there like we just got beaten the fuck up by a pack of wild dogs.
Yeah.
And then before we can even recuperate, you know, they're announcing that the second one's going to film like immediately. They're just going to immediately turn around, which makes you think, well, shit, they were just planning it from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Then Goyer and Snyder start doing interviews everywhere going, oh, it was our idea to have Superman kill. We were like, this Superman's boring if he doesn't kill. I mean, we've got to put that threat in there that he's capable of it. Otherwise, in a world where everyone knows he's never going to kill anyone, I mean, how could Superman even get around?
Right.
I don't know. There's 75 years worth of fucking stories where he's managed. Maybe you could read one of those.
I knew you were holding back. I knew it.
Well, okay. So Batman's going to be in it. Oh, well, we just got off for three really great Batman movies. Oh, yeah. Fuck Chris's Batman. He didn't even want us to have Superman kill. All new Batman. Mm. All new Batman. And it's going to be fucking Affleck. Mm. Okay, well, Superman versus Batman. You know, maybe Superman is, you know, seen as a threat. And here comes Batman. He's like, there's fucking aliens showing up. He 9/11'd us. We've got to fucking stop him. Mm. Maybe they'll use that. No, Wonder Woman's in it too. Oh, Wonder Woman's in it too. Well, thank you. Because heaven forbid, Batman's already had 12 movies and Superman's had 15.
Yeah.
But let's just shove fucking Wonder Woman in there. And then every week it's a new goddamn casting rumor. Yeah. And so it's just like,
too many heroes, too many. This is like the opposite problem of Marvel. Usually it's too many villains. Well, we may have too many heroes here.
It's the opposite problem with some Marvel movies, okay? Mm. Because I got news for you. This fucking X-Men movie coming up is going to suck ass.
You think so?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
it's
now.
It's going to suck ass.
Why? I have high hopes for this. I actually think I'm pretty excited about it. And I know it's, look, I'm not a fan of like, hey, past people working with the current people. But it is a cool comic book thing they do all the time. So that in itself is kind of like, all right, I can kind of justify that. I can deal with it. But it's the return of What's-His-Beak right. directing. He's got some love for this franchise. I can't think of his name.
Well, I'll tell you what. Okay, so X-Men was a great movie. It still holds up. I watch it all the time. I really like that movie. Some of the designs are a little creepy and a little dated now. But it's still a good flick, and it's a good Wolverine movie, and I really dig the first X-Men movie. Then X2 comes along, and it's a really great movie. For as many characters that are in it,
yeah,
it's a good flick. Yeah, okay, so then Snyder leaves to go do Superman Lists.
Not okay. Snyder. Wait, who are you thinking of?
Not Snyder.
Bryan Singer.
Singer. Bryan Singer leaves to go have Superman lift some shit for an hour and a half. Okay. And then Brett Ratner comes on because need another Rush Hour movie. And he gives us Frasier the Beast and Colossus for a split second.
Frasier the Beast was the best thing in that movie, though. There were other things, but what I mean is, of the new things brought to the table in that third horrible, I did not like the third one at all. I thought it was terrible. But I thought his beast was all right.
His beast was okay
yeah.
until he started fighting people. There's one scene where whenever we watch the movie where he like rips someone up and Wolverine goes, I thought you were a pacifist. And he goes, well, I think it was. And you can't, you just, you can almost hear him go,
man, please Scott Kurtz, tell me that you have set aside July 4th weekend to come to Nerdtacular.
Yeah, dude. You can get this on stage. You couldn't contain it.
It's too much.
It's too much. Too much, man.
You can just hear him go, oh, Niles. But so then that movie comes out, and it's just a wreck, right? It just kind of is. There's some good moments to it.
Sure.
There's some bad moments, like where it's daytime and Magneto lifts the Golden Gate Bridge, and then the Golden Gate Bridge lands, and it's night.
Mm.
Watch that movie again.
Yeah.
It's fucking midday when that bridge goes up.
Yeah.
And then he turns it and he drops it, and everyone goes, did he just do that? And then it's nighttime.
Yeah.
Like it's pitch black.
Yeah. Daylight savings.
Daylight savings.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. So.
We're all thinking the same thing.
So, okay. So then you have X-Men First Class, right? So Matthew Vaughn comes in off of his stellar fucking movie Kick Ass.
Yeah.
And he does X-Men First Class. You know, the movie where the Beast is. Superpowers is to run fast like a fucking gazelle, because when you have feet and hands like an ape, your superpower must be that you're the fucking Flash.
I liked that movie though. You didn't like that one? I thought it was all right.
Stupidest. Hey, you mean the movie where Magneto almost kills like half the group, and then almost murders their mentor, and he goes, it's either us or them, guys. Who you're with? And everyone goes, eh, fuck it. I'll go with you.
Yeah, but they had to create like a simple, hey, broad audience, here's how this split happens. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's not great.
The tornado guy just tried to murder all of them, and they're holding hands to blink out. Like, Azazel and all these guys just want, I don't know. Anyway, so that movie comes and goes.
Right.
Now Singer is back.
Yeah.
So you think, you know what? X2 is pretty great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Days of Future. What's this? It's Days of Future Past? That's like my favorite story from the comics.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That means we're going to get like an opportunity for him to come in and go, I'm kind of undoing everything. I'm going to get a little time travel in here and undo everything.
Right.
So you think, you know what? This might not be so bad. What? You're already announcing Age of Apocalypse. You haven't even let this movie out. What in the fuck?
Listen, this is all roll down effect. This is Marvel going, hey guys, check it out, and boom, just creaming everybody. So they're all trying to do it. That's all. Fox is now trying to do it. That's still Marvel, and you know, tangentially speaking, but it's still, you know, it's a separate studio, and they're trying to make the most out of their license. And this is just them trying to do it. And I think DC's doing the same thing. They're all going, we got to do that. We got to do that thing that they're doing.
But the problem is that, like, you know, the problem with the new Superman movie is that we already know they don't get Superman, so we're already effed, right?
Mm, in theory, I still like the idea, and you even said it, of Batman coming in and being the voice of reason and saying, "Dude, you look what you did," and getting down to it with that. I think that's, if there's a way to bring him to account a little bit, at least morally speaking, that's the way to do it. I don't know if they're going to. I have no idea if that's in the plan, but that's how they should do it. You know,
it's how they should do it, but. What you're describing to me is a movie where Batman comes in and takes on the villain, the misunderstood villain, Superman.
Mm.
Think about what you're saying here. I'm not against it. I understand where you're coming from, and that would be cool.
Yeah.
But that's still casting Superman as a even kind of a dumb villain. But I mean, not like an intentional villain, but oh well. He's not Pol Pot, but he's a dumb shit, you know? I mean, at that point, he's the guy from Of Mice and Men that just keeps petting things too hard.
Well, he's already not your Superman at this point, based on the first movie. So that is a way to sort of redeem him in a way to bring him back a little bit.
Yeah. And maybe he can't be brought back enough for you, but I feel like I would at least appreciate them acknowledging that I'm not crazy and that what I saw was too much.
Yeah.
That's, and so I'm with Mark in that it can inch it back and it can create a really interesting twist in story. I mean, I just don't know that they're brave enough to do it.
I think that the brave way to do that is to have Lex Luthor show up and politically say, this guy is... Remember when aliens came and destroyed Metropolis? We need to get rid of him. Like, don't buy the fact that he's here to help us, because he's not. And the military doesn't trust him, because I've been listening in on them and they don't trust him. And then set villain up as this Luthor up as this villain. But that's kind of an interesting story, and they're not really interested in that. And then on top of that, you have to I lost my train of thought.
You have to bring in naked Aquaman.
The problem is that is never going to happen, because at the end of that movie, the writers of that movie said, by the way, I know that to all of you watching that watch 9/11 on TV, all this rebar and this recreation of 9/11 imagery, like by taking actual photos and photoshopping them in on top of Jenny Olsen, made you a little crazy. Yeah. And I know that you're thinking right now that maybe we'll address that in the second movie. But right before the credits hit, we want to show you everyone going to baseball games. Like, they're at the planet going, hey, I've got two tickets to the game. Who wants to go? And you're like, nobody, because the stadium was fucking wrecked by that alien. And all half the baseball team is dead, and so is my Grammy. And I'm fucking going through PTSD right now because I was under rebar last week. Baseball?
I agree, dude. Picking up the pieces is a weird prospect for that, for the whole series. It's
so
just
they end that movie with this cute little welcome to the planet.
Yeah.
And we're still like going, oh God. Remember when the towers fell, guys?
Yeah, remember that?
Like you're looking at people next to you in the theater going, remember when the towers fell? Yeah. Where were you?
Yeah. And that looked like that. That reminded me of that.
Welcome to the planet.
Yeah.
Credit. And so now it's like, I want you to remember who defeated you, Clark, at Comic-Con. Everyone's like, oh my God, they're gonna have Batman come in and kick Clark's ass because he kind of fucked up and he wasn't the Superman that we know, but they're gonna address it. Affleck's Batman. It's still okay. Wonder Woman's in it. Fuck. Doomsday. Come on.
What about this one? Phil Morris as Lex Luthor.
What? Wait, who's Phil Morris? I can't.
You'll know him mostly for his voice acting work. He was John Jones in Smallville, the television series.
Oh.
He was the voice of the doctor in Atlantis.
Yeah, this is him. Actor.
Were you a fan of Seinfeld? Because he was Kramer's
He was Kramer's lawyer. Oh, yeah,
that's the only.
I'm looking at it online. I'm like, that's the only picture I recognize.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
If it doesn't fit, you have to acquit or whatever.
He
was basically doing that dude from the OJ trial.
He was basically Johnny Cochran.
Yeah. Cochran.
That's great.
He's all right. Fine. I'm down with that. I'm fine with that. I don't know why. I'm okay with it.
It's gonna be shit. Oh, and also, look at this First Class movie. It's all over the fucking place. Did you notice that the Beast? They completely redesigned the Beast.
Yeah, it's not even the same guy, though, is it?
It is the same guy.
The same kid this time.
Same guy. But there's also a picture of him where he's with Wolverine and a Xavier who's in a wheelchair. So it's post First Class because Xavier's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he's all hippied out. But the Beast is in human form. And then there's a spot of him fighting Magneto where he kind of looks halfway between a human and the Beast that he was in at the end of First Class. So you think, well, you know what? Maybe the stills we're getting, he's changing into the Beast as he's fighting Magneto. So these shots are from the day they shot the middle transformation part, right?
Yeah.
But then a couple press photos have come out. Like for posters and stuff, and he's in the costume, and that's his face now.
Huh. I haven't seen these. I have to look these up. I'm interested in that.
It's like someone went. I guess they're going to either not explain it or say, "No, I'm still mutating." I guess.
Well, that is the deal, right? He keeps the comics have always had him always devolving, right? Like he's almost an animal by the time things get done.
He's having like third and fourth mutations and stuff.
Right. He looks like a freaking blue tiger by the end of what I just most recent thing I read, which I could not tell you what it was. The last series I kind of brushed off. I cannot remember what it was, but he was by the end of that thing. You could have put him on a leash and, you know.
Yeah, they made him look real cat-like for a while.
Like a panther, basically. Blue panther.
You know, I've got to say, as much as I admire the knowledge base, especially like of you three and your history with comics and these characters, I have to say, when it comes to watching these movies, I'm so glad that I don't know the things that I don't know, because I enjoy these movies so much more than the people who have the ability to dissect it and find its flaws. I'm like sitting there completely ignorant, stuffing popcorn in my face, like, oh, this is great.
Well, it's an important point, right? Because it's not, you can't be alone. There's got to be plenty of guys like you who are just enjoying him for what they are.
Yeah. I think a lot of people like Man of Steel. And I think a lot of people like the X-Men movies. I
really like First Class. I don't know what where I went wrong with that. If I was not to like it, but I liked it.
Well, and then once somebody points out the flaws, and I go, "Oh, you know what? You're right. That's a little off. That shouldn't have been that way." Then it's like, okay, well, that just tainted my experience of the movie. But I didn't have that initially.
Right. We've done it
too. You know what I mean? So my ignorance of it allows me to enjoy the movie a little bit more.
It's like the time I learned what a Cleveland Steamer was. I thought it was a train.
Take the Cleveland Steamer.
I thought people would go to Cleveland and get on this happy train that was some historic, you know, thing.
I had to send Scott an email explaining it to
him. Going around the town going, the Cleveland Steamer, hop aboard and enjoy the historic Cleveland.
I'm not really as mad about this movie as I just, that was mostly because I know Scott wanted me to get pissed.
No, I like it because I think it keeps us honest. I really like to, I mean, look, the problem,
all aboard.
The problem is, like, if somebody, you know, I don't know what to compare this to, but it's just like anything. It's something you really, really care for and love it when it's in the right hands and people are treating it well, then you're excited and happy. But then, you know, I can't get excited about the third Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie because I think it's just terrible. And those things that I love weren't well protected in those movies. And actually, all three really don't hold up anymore, by the way. That's a weird series in that regard. But
it really is weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
I think that when it comes down to it, with these movies, any superhero movie, really, it comes down to one of two things. You either have a really good story to tell that is separate from any of the mythology, okay, that might be happening. That's just a fun movie, okay? Mm-hmm. Which probably speaks to what you're saying. I think it was Mark that was saying that he's glad he doesn't have the knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoyed Hancock.
Right.
I really loved that movie. And I think it's because there's a little bit of what truth to what you said. Hancock was just kind of an out of nowhere movie about a superhero, and I didn't have any preconceived notions about who he should or shouldn't be. But when it comes down to these superhero movies, especially with the Trinity, right? We have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Either you have a really good story like Batman, where it's a story about redemption and vengeance, okay, or you have kind of a mythology here to give people something, which is what I think 75 years worth of Superman has become, this kind of icon to look up to. Same thing for Wonder Woman too, especially Wonder Woman, because it's just like anytime you listen to Nichelle Nichols do an interview about Star Trek, and she talks about how she was going to quit, and Reverend King told her don't, because you're up there on TV, and it's important. So, you know, right now we're in a time where girls are having a really hard time seeing anything on TV that represents them, that's anything like them, anything like their body type, anything about like the way they feel. So we're in a time, kind of a golden time of movies and TV, where people have more creative control than ever, and the studio is starting to realize that if you make something good, it does well. For DC and Warner Brothers not to give girls a Wonder Woman movie is criminal.
Oh yeah,
especially
right now.
It really is weird.
Just really criminal.
I mean, look at the last couple of weeks in the theaters. What are the top two movies?
Oh yeah,
Catching Fire and Frozen, two strong female led movies.
Yeah, girls relate to that stuff.
Oh yeah,
right. I mean, and I don't know why everyone hated on Brave. I thought Brave was awesome.
I don't think everyone hated on it. I think some people were just hating on what they consider to be kids' movies. I think Brave was rad.
I thought Brave was rad. I thought Hunger Games is great. It's really criminal for DC, and it's just really kind of stupid on their part. In a time when strong female leads are hot, when you have ostensibly the strongest female archetype in franchise history,
yeah,
and you don't make a Wonder Woman movie, you're dumb shits.
Yeah, and I get, you get tastes of it too. You'll see, I don't know, an X-Men movie and go, man, sure wish they'd use Storm more. She's a cool.
Or Storm Wright.
Yeah. Or I mean, Wright. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. But there's a hint of it, right? You kind of get a taste of it and you go, yeah,
you do
why
a little
not
bit.
More of that?
There's a great scene in X-Men where Halle Berry has an actual decent moment where the senator says, are you afraid? Do you hate humans? She goes, sometimes. And he's like, why do you hate us? And she goes, because I'm afraid of you. Yeah. And then the senator, his fucking mutation thing destabilizes, and it's kind of a scary scene.
Yeah, it is.
But it's really spooky.
It's really weird.
But it's a good scene, right? It's a good moment. And then, but imagine if Storm had been like Angela Bassett in a goddess, like in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, holy crap.
Yeah, dude.
All I'm saying is that when you sit down and watch a movie like The Rocketeer, which is kind of a superhero movie.
Great movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah. And the reason why it's a great movie is not because you know anything about The Rocketeer, but because it's fun. It's just so fun. And I think that's what happened, and the reason why these Marvel movies hit so big is not because they have the right characters or anything, but just because when you took Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. and you put them together, they told a great story and they had a ton of fun.
Yeah.
And then they did Captain America and Thor, same thing. If you'll notice it, right? Really good moments, but just a ton of fun and bright and fun. So
the Avengers just extended that.
Yeah, and
yeah.
And the stories are decent. X-Men First Class is a terrible story. What's the villain's motivation? This is a villain who's never traveling anywhere unless it's on a yacht.
Yeah.
And his plan is to make the world an atomic wasteland so that his people can thrive?
Yeah, they gloss over it. But, you know, deep-seated Nazi freaking blah, blah, blah. All that stuff supposed to be in there. It's all supposed to be part of his breakage.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, however, it all comes down to telling a good story. And it's just hard for me to believe. When I look at a trailer, there could be a good story anywhere in a Spider-Man movie where I already know we're getting Spider-Man, Electro, the Rhino, and both Green Goblins. Yeah. Like, there's just not enough room.
Are there both the Goblins are representing? I didn't realize that.
The Goblin that you're seeing is Harry Osborn.
Oh.
And Norman Osborn was the first Green Goblin.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And in the trailer, he's walking past a Doc Ock. Arms and the vulture wings.
Vulture. Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, it's a lot. I'm a little bugged by that. Although I'm kind of excited for that movie. On the other hand, it's like, oh, villain overload again. What are we doing here? And Brian or Steven, you had an idea. You told us about the other day about the potential of that being the what do they call it? The Sinister Six?
Oh, the Sinister Six. Yeah. It's one great way to do it. Now, relating to Rhino specifically. If anybody's read like the Ultimate Spider-Man in like the first year, like the first omnibus, there's a thing where this guy charges out and he's dressed in the Rhino suit. He's like, I'm the Rhino. And then pow, you know, Spider-Man takes him down in the first scene. And then that's all you see of him for like 2 years. So while we may get a lot of villains in here, again, we see things out of context. So we assume that because the poster is divided into three and each one of them features a villain that all three of them are going to get equal time.
Yeah.
It may not be the case.
Sure.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Paul Giamatti's character is there for like the opening fight sequence and that's it.
Oh, wow. That'd be crazy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us about these DC. That's a good transition. DC is doing this other thing, which is, again, kind of following Marvel's lead.
Yeah, I was going to say they're kind of following Marvel. Marvel announced a couple months ago, that they're going to be doing series specifically on Netflix.
Yeah.
And now DC has come out and said, well, you know what? We're still going to do superhero movies, but we're going to make them smaller budgeted superhero movies. And for them, smaller budget is in the range of $20 to $40 million. Mm. But keep in mind that doesn't count advertising. So you're really looking in a range of $40 to $80 million. Mm. More than likely for these budgets. So we may not see characters like Wonder Woman or The Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, all this stuff we've been talking about in these lower budget movies, but we may see a Booster Gold. We may see a Team Seven. Mm-hmm. We may see a Suicide Squad. Heck, you may even see another Jonah Hex movie pop up there.
Could be, you know, Green Arrow could be.
Yeah.
Booster Gold could be pretty cool, man.
I think it would be. Definitely with the, what's his name? Jaime Reyes, Blue Beetle. I think you could do some really cool things there on a lower budget.
Blue Beetle. Love the Blue Beetle.
Well, yeah. You think with a lower budget that we might actually have more focus on story to actually get a good story in there?
I think so. Don't you think?
Much opportunity for Flash.
Depends.
Right. You have. Don't you have less of a? I'm with Mark on this. You have less chance of a. When you make a movie, it's a part of the problem with the big DC stuff. I think is you're making the biggest possible thing ever, and you're just so careful that you end up being really careless. And you are so worried about bottom lines and everything's got to be as broad an audience as possible. We can't possibly do that storyline. That's too smart for people or it's too whatever. And I think they're too cautious on TV. It feels like it's a much different place now. You can explore weird stuff and go deep and, you know, get into the periphery. I mean, if anything, S.H.I.E.L.D. is, I mean, I know S.H.I.E.L.D. plays off the popularity of the Avengers and all that, but I know a lot of people don't like it, but it's succeeding on, not just that connection, but also here's another piece. So for them to, for DC to say, all right, here's 80 million, let's make a Green Arrow movie or a, sure. you know, something else.
And I'm hoping that that's what they mean by low budget. I mean, just to put the fear of the fear into people's pants. Roger Corman did a low budget Fantastic Four movie.
I own that
back in 2000. What was it?
94. I own that on VHS. It's a beast. That thing.
That is a low budget $1 million superhero movie. So yeah,
it's a steaming hot pile of shit, is what it is.
As long you know, there's some good ideas.
It's really fun to watch.
Yeah,
that thing suit is something to behold. It's really
the one
special.
That looks like a lizard.
Yeah, it's special. Yellow lizard is what it is. Well, cool. We'll see how that goes. And you talked about the Marvel and Netflix team up. The Daredevil business is coming first, and we've got all kinds of updates on that. The short of it is we've got, what, directors, producers, all that stuff's lined up. We don't have an actor yet, but we know, you know, that things are moving along.
Right. Drew Goddard, the guy behind Cloverfield and episodes of Lost and Buffy, he's writing and directing the first episode, and he's also producing the overall series.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. So we'll see when that happens. We don't have a date.
2015.
Okay. Wow, that year is a weird year.
It's coming up very quickly.
What a strange year. You're going to have your Warcraft movie. Although, didn't they? Yeah, no, they postponed bumped that, it to 2016.
They did that to season, 2016. March.
Well, they heard. So I was at BlizzCon when the news happened. So we were there, and I think I was actually in the panel with Duncan Jones talking to everybody. Or it wasn't in the panel, it was in the audience listening. And it was right around then that Disney announced that it would be that same weekend that Blizzard had previously announced their film was coming out for Star Wars Episode 7. And they immediately thought about that and delayed it. And Blizzard is they're no stranger to delaying things, but you know, there's no way they were going to use that same weekend. Not a chance in hell. Nobody wants to go near that. Like for good or for bad, whatever J.J. Abrams does of Star Wars, nobody wants to be within 1,000 feet of that. So they pushed it to 2016, which is interesting. But yeah, 2015 is just shaping up to be like the year when everything comes out. And that's going to be some weird stuff. Archie Comics donates $1 million worth of books to Toys for Tots. That's nice.
Sure it is.
Way to go. Did they send that zombie one that was all serious? Probably
not. Oh, man, that probably not.
Yeah. We talked about it last time. That was good. You liked that,
right?
Yeah,
it was. That's really good. And I'll talk about it again shortly.
Yeah, I meant to read it. I guess I'll... Now I'll write it down.
Digital.
Yeah, digital. It's digital, right? All digital, that particular series.
Okay. No, it's not all digital. You can get it in print.
Oh, you can get that in print?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Jughead still in there?
Not
spoilers.
Not as the Jughead Jones, you know.
Okay.
Yes and no.
Okay. He's,
He's hurting.
He's
he's hungry.
He's seen better days.
Okay. Fair enough. You read that, Scott?
I've seen the cover.
Yeah. You probably infer a lot from that.
You can infer quite a bit from that cover.
Yeah. He's basically patient zero.
So I got this, Mark, genuine question for you. I think I kind of have a pretty good idea of your taste in terms of what books kind of get to you and what don't.
Sure.
Does the Archie stuff, as the youngest guy in the room, ever really appeal to,
no.
to you? No, not so much?
Not at all.
I have still nostalgia for it, but Yeah.
I think you should pick up Afterlife with Archie. It is, it'll change your mind. It's not your typical Archie book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if there's something like a different spin on it, a different take on it, that I might do.
Yeah. I think that'd be interesting.
Just out of curiosity.
I need to read it. And maybe that'll be the thing that we try to read some of before next week, and we can all kind of share our thoughts.
Let's do it.
I like it.
Third issue comes out next week or the week after. I think maybe Christmas week, I think, is when it comes out.
Well, good on
this
them.
Is Afterlife, it's called?
Yeah. Afterlife with Archie.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
I love it. Good on them for the charity. That's awesome. And then finally, Marvel cancels A+X, Avengers plus X-Men, due to what, Steven, do you think? Lack of interest?
Ran its course, lack of interest. Mm. The next big thing, Marvel, they can't put A+X now.
Mm.
On the end of it, A+X.1. I don't know. It just seems probably like it's time for it to.
They're on to their next big event.
Yeah, Inhumanity is the next big thing. Which I think we talked about on the last show, that maybe that's Marvel's attempt to create a new series of mutants so that they can have mutants in their Marvel Disney owned movies as opposed to having to deal with the other people.
Mm. That's great.
So I don't know, but A+X ran its course. Inhumanity now.
Yeah. And the gist of Inhumanity is what? I've not touched any of that.
The Inhumans, we've known of them, just several of them over the years, but apparently there are more people in hiding whose powers and abilities make them inhuman. Not mutants, but not human.
Do you feel like when they do this, when they do this sort of thing, do you think it's a nice test bed for them to say, you know, we all know all the stable of characters. Everybody's done a million books on everybody. You know, there's nothing new under the sun for Spider-Man, really. And so sometimes when they try to expand him, it ends up being kind of a dumb move or a little weird or whatever.
Yeah.
Does this give them opportunities to say, let's take some of our ideas for characters, humans, powers, mutants, whatever, that we haven't been able to put on paper before, and see if they flesh out to be proper, straight-up characters that you would actually want to have persist and create their own books and things like that. Does that ever happen with events like this?
That all happens all the time.
Mm.
I guess one of the most recent, well, it happens all the time. The one that I was more familiar with was back in the 90s when DC Comics did Bloodlines, where these aliens came in and essentially killed normal civilians, and then they gained new powers. And so you had a whole slew of new characters that developed into their own series. Some of them lasted, some of them didn't. So Inhumanity, same thing.
That's cool. Whoa.
Uh-oh, Scott Kurtz is rocking the beatbox.
Yeah, what was that? That was weird. Scott, are you there?
Setting off fireworks.
That did not sound good on his end. Oh, we lost him. That must mean he's coming back.
Come back, Scott.
Good deal. Well, let's get to some of the quickie news here. And to do that, I will play this.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
Jason Momoa, we talked about that. Maybe in the Batman movie. We don't know as who. I still like Lobo. That's my pick of choice. We'll see how that goes.
Sure.
You guys see the Godzilla trailer? That's cool.
Oh yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very dark.
Yeah. What do you think of all the dudes really jump out of planes like that with like the stuff on their legs, or is that just for us? Like the
I was wondering what's with the red smoke.
I don't know. It seems like maybe it was a way to track where your drop went. Like maybe they should have used that when they were doing D-Day. We wouldn't have lost so many guys over the line there in France.
To me, it seems like a great way to say, hey, giant lizard, look at us falling from the sky.
Yeah.
You know, I'm back. Are we talking about Godzilla?
Yep. There you are. Yes, Godzilla. Yes. Go with thoughts. What do you think?
This is one movie where I'm okay to see disaster porn.
Yeah.
Because it's a metaphor for that. Like, Godzilla is a metaphor for war.
Do you struggle, though, with the fact that, okay, so my recollection of the early Godzilla stuff, the Japanese 50s films and so on, they were, you know, Godzilla was originally kind of this metaphor for
the fuck
for the bomb.
What
and
the
all
fuck?
What, yeah, yeah, are we losing you again? Is he going away? Is your internet poo?
I think very that was, angry. I think he's very angry was, at yeah. Skype right now.
I think that was him falling off and not knowing we could hear that.
The funny thing is, you don't know whether he's mad at the topic that we're talking about or Skype. you can't tell the difference.
It's kind of the same thing, right? All right, well, we're ringing him back, and it is indeed ringing him back. There you go. Scott, are you there?
Jesus.
What the heck, man? Your internet up there is the worst. What's going on?
I don't know. I quickly rebooted my internet.
Oh, well, good. You're fine.
The 1950s.
An analogy of war and destruction and the bomb specifically and all this stuff. But it seemed like he pretty quickly turned into a hero. So he was the guy now saving Tokyo from everything else. that was huge and was coming to get him.
On and off.
This movie is another just monster movie where he's the bad guy, it seems like. So is he the bad guy? Is that fine with everybody? Because I'm having kind of a Superman problem with it, where I just kind of like, well, wait, I mean, he's misunderstood, but ultimately doesn't he protect Tokyo? And it doesn't look like it's in Tokyo is the other problem I have with it. I wish it was all in Japan. I'm being a purist here about a really dumb thing. I get that. I should just see this as, like you said,
I understand where you're coming from. Yeah. Absolutely. No, Godzilla is fair in mind. It's the first things that I drew, according to my dad, were not cartoons that I would draw the Godzilla logo.
Oh, wow.
I used to draw letters, big block letters, and Godzilla was what I always wrote. The Godzilla I was introduced to as a kid was the era of Godzilla in the 70s where he had kind of become like kind of a iconic symbol, and they did a couple episodes. So or a couple movies. I think the big turning point for Godzilla was there. It was a Godzilla movie they made where a little kid was talking to – had imaginary best friend that was Godzilla's son, Minya. And he had kind of an adventure in his head. Godzilla got a little silly during that.
Yep, I remember that.
And then there were a couple movies after that, like Godzilla versus Megalon and Godzilla versus Ghidorah and stuff, where he's always something they're afraid of, you know, but you could only have him destroy this Tokyo over and over so many times, so they would throw other monsters in front of him.
Yeah.
And then the nicest he ever got was there was another monster threatening them, and Godzilla fought that monster, so that worked. But then they were afraid Godzilla was going to do something bad, and then he would just go off into the ocean. They're like, he understands. He's going to leave us alone. But for the most part, even in the newer movies, because they kind of in Japan in 2000, they started doing new ones.
Yeah.
He's always been a destructive force.
Mm. Now, the American one, we don't think about that one anymore, do we? That was a bad one with Hank Azaria in it. Remember that?
Oh, the Broderick one.
Yeah, the Broderick one. Dumb. Yeah, it was pretty dumb.
I kind of like that movie in a way. If you watch that movie and pretend that it's just a big lizard comes to town and people have seen Godzilla movies, so they call him Godzilla.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you?
It's a better movie.
It's a better movie. But I'll remember that
if I ever see it again. Probably won't happen. Anyway.
My 6-year-old wanted to watch the trailer and I was like, okay, because I've already seen it. There's nothing really bad in this. Scott Kurtz is flipping his mind right now.
Oh, is he out again? We lose him?
No. Just because I'm showing a kid
something
that's terrible. The 2-year-old was in the room.
Yeah.
And he stops and watches.
Yeah.
And man, when Godzilla's head pops up, he's just like, giant dinosaur!
He loved it.
Oh, yeah. 2-year-old loved it. So yeah.
Look, kids like that kind of stuff.
I think I'll be taking him to see it.
I mean, I admit, I'm a sucker for the little things they do in trailers, like it's all sort of hinted at. It's a very long trailer. You don't see the creature and much of it ever, but you do see at the end kind of those very iconic spikes on the back and on the tail.
And the roar.
And the roar. And you hear that roar and you just go,
The iconic roar.
Yeah, you hear that and you just go, whoa, dude, they're just being serious here. This is like, that's freaking Godzilla right there. So,
well, in the first trailer, the first teaser, they showed another monster corpse.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
Corpse.
With a bunch of legs. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Godzilla's wife, probably.
No, it's been confirmed that there'll be other monsters that he'll be fighting in this. It won't just be him.
I always liked that it was Godzilla had, like family.
Godzilla on Monster Island.
Yeah, Monster Island, dude.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Of course, what else? Hellboy Day is March 22nd, 2014. What is that, the 20-year?
20th anniversary of Hellboy.
Good Lord. Wow. That's pretty great. Mm. Good job, Mignola. What's he doing now? What's he making? What's he doing?
Hellboy.
Is that it? That's all?
He does Hellboy. Well, I mean, he oversees the entire BPRD universe.
Yeah.
Hellboy, Abe Sapien.
Yeah.
Whatever else is in that.
Speaking of your Niles Crane, remember him in the first movie? I think it was Niles Crane's voice, wasn't it? I think it was. It could be.
Yes.
It was uncredited or something. There was some weird deal with that.
Oh, the fishy dude, right?
Yeah, fishy dude.
Yeah, Abe Sapien.
Yeah. Man, if you ever get those trades, Mark, they're amazing.
Yeah, I have to.
So good. Colin Bunn, Six Guns fame. And Gabriel Hernandez, Walta, team up for Magneto number one. So Colin's the writer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not the artist. That's interesting.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that since you like Six Gun.
Six Gun. I love the writing particularly, so this is exciting to me. I hope those guys keep getting their due. I feel like I mean, I hadn't heard of it until Scott on this very show, episode one, said you should be reading this series. And it's still in my top like three comics I ever want to read.
Are you reading the new stuff at Robot Six?
I'm behind, but no. I'm behind on a lot of stuff. So I should be doing that. The last I ended up with any of that stuff was Sons of the Gun, the kind of prequel stuff, which I thought I wasn't going to like and ended up loving that. Oh, my gosh, that was good. So I'm behind on all that stuff. But I like what all those guys are doing. It's amazing stuff. Disney, let's see, acquires Indiana Jones rights from Paramount, which means, who knows what that means, but now
more
Disney owns
Indiana
all of it.
Jones movies.
Yeah.
Bud Williams, woo!
No more, you won't have any more Harrison Ford. And everyone's voting for, what's his name? The new Dread guy, Dr.
McCoy. Carl Urban?
Yeah, everybody, we did a little poll, everybody says Carl Urban. I say, fine, that's fine. I feel like he's maybe getting into the role, maybe too old if that's really who they pick. Because he's like our age. Who else? There was other
Scott,
names.
You're making us sound old, man.
I know, because we are, dude. We're getting there. We're getting on.
I'm still young at heart, so screw you.
What do you mean our age?
Old man.
Our age. So I'm, what am I now? 44. So Steven.
Jeez. Yeah. You guys can be my dad's.
I'm 43. I'm
yeah,
only
almost
44. 2 months behind.
Yeah, a couple months behind me. And then you got Scott Kurtz just behind that.
42, yeah.
42.
Wow.
And then you
am
got,
I the young one?
And no, Mark, no, Mark, what are you, 30? What are you?
36 or 37. I always have to check with Nicole.
Asshole.
You're so young, dude. You bastard.
So young. I'm just
what's
little,
it like?
I'm a spry little chicken.
What's it like living in your time?
I don't know. There's hair growing out of my ear and...
Oh, that's where it starts. Good luck with that.
There's kind of hair growing out of everywhere.
Before you know it, you got to get eye surgery like me, like some old fart. X-Men Age of Apocalypse scheduled for 2016.
Wow, so excited.
That's cool. Scott's so excited about that one. As you heard before, really riveted and excited about it. So we'll see how that turns out. All right. Let's. That's all we have for news. Let's jump right into what we're reading.
If we should fail, our volunteer will be dead within minutes.
Scott Kurtz, what books have you consumed since last we met?
Very little books. Mm. No books.
You moved.
But I have been watching a ton of stuff. Mm. So I'm going to recommend some other pop culture-y stuff all that right. If you are into comic books, you will like.
Perfect.
The TV show Almost Human.
No, I heard good. Carl Urban speaking of.
That's the cop drama, right?
It is. And it's pretty good. I really like it.
I
and
heard great things, yeah.
It's a ton of fun. I think there's only like four or five episodes right now, but definitely go to On Demand or iTunes and catch up on that. They're handling it pretty well. It's pretty cool. And the relationship between the cop and his android partner is really great and fun. And they're handling him as an android really good, really well. It's not Data where you're like, well, wait a minute. If you don't have any emotions, then why do you care if you're more human? Okay. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a lot of fun. I'm also going to recommend, TV-wise, Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yeah. Another one everyone tells me I should be seeing.
I'm telling you, I did not expect to like this one. You have Ichabod Crane waking up in modern times after being kind of supernaturally put to sleep back in his time, and the Headless Horseman is back, and Sleepy Hollow is now kind of a small Rhode Island town where creepy things are happening. But the really saving grace of this show is that the relationship between Ichabod Crane, a man out of time, and Abigail Mills, who plays the young African-American cop that kind of has a kind of a connection to Ichabod and his situation to something that happened when she was a kid. So she immediately believes that he's real and kind of buys into the whole story. Mm. They made the Headless Horseman one of the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which I thought was super clever.
Was it war or was it...
I think he's war. Yeah.
Like
no,
war.
He's death. He's death.
Death.
He's
all right. Death. Death's cool.
He's death on a pale horse. Right. And so they're essentially the two witnesses from Revelations that are trying to stop the end of the world.
Oh, that's cool.
And wow, so smart. Really, really clever. And the way that they handle Ichabod being in present time is really, I think it's handled very, very well. It's handled in a, you know, things aren't that much different. Like, he's not having that hard of a... That's my dad, my dog scratching. Oh. He's just going to scratch.
It's your dad.
Your dad's scratching. Great.
My dad. Hey, Butler.
We keep him chained to the wall.
That's my dad trying to get out of his chains. He handles it by not being so... They handle it by having him not being so fazed by everything.
Right.
And so it's pretty cool. I thought that was pretty awesome. Yeah. One of the first things he asked Abigail is, have you been freed? So are you a freed slave? Mm. He wasn't like, what are the slaves doing out? You know,
right.
It's really good. So
I want to see that. I've been.
Yeah. Sleepy Hollow and Almost Human are good TV.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to recommend that you don't watch something.
Uh-oh.
Okay? Oh, I've been waiting for this.
I watched Kick-Ass 2 last night.
Oh, I heard such bad things about Kick-Ass 2.
In preparation for this show, I thought, I have not read comics.
Yeah.
Wife's out of town. I'm just going to on demand it. Mm. What a piece of shit. Mm. Holy crap. Mm. What a piece of shit.
Well, how'd you feel about the first one? Just for context. As a film, I mean, I know, however we feel about the comic, whatever.
It was novel. Mm. But boy, it did not explore anything remotely cool. Because you had the situation like, what if people did dress up as superheroes? What would happen? Well, they get over their head super, super fast.
Yeah.
And they do it to an extent pretty well in the first comic. And then they take a couple of stupid 80s movies kind of shortcuts, especially at the end. But this movie is such a parody of itself and just so... it's just so plotting.
Mm.
Does anyone care? Like, I mean, I guess if you're listening, spoilers.
I think it's fun like, to talk about
halfway,
it.
The best part of the movie is the 15-year-old girl that's a mass murderer, right? Like, she's a vigilante. It's like, what if Batman were a 15-year-old girl?
Yeah. And had no problem killing everybody, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's the most interesting part of the movie is her dad was Batman and went a little nuts. Like, what would it explores, like, think about Batman and Robin. He's a nutbag that's training a kid, preteen kid, or mid-teen kid, to be a murderer. Like, yep. To just be a vigilante crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
She's in the movie for maybe 30 minutes and then decides, to honor my dad, I gotta give this up. And then it becomes Mean Girls for her.
Mm.
Like, half of the movie is Kick-Ass joining a supergroup. And the other half is her trying to fit in at school.
Hmm.
It's really weird, man.
Yeah. I haven't heard anybody who liked it. I haven't talked to a soul who liked it.
It's just such a perfect culmination of all the bullshit Mark Miller puts out there, man.
Hmm.
It's just sensationalist. It's just violent for the sake of violence.
Hmm.
And over the top for the sake of being over the top.
Yeah.
And none of it resonates.
How's the Jim Carrey role? Any good?
The best part of the whole movie, man.
Mm.
He's great. Like, they give him the buzz cut, and he's in the mask, and then they give him this kind of broken nose because he's supposed to be like an ex-mafia guy.
Yeah.
But the voice he does and the way he portrays it is the best part of the movie. Mm. And so, like, I can see where the parts he filmed seem like one kind of a movie. And then he went and watched the whole thing, and he's like, this is terrible.
Yeah, that's when he was distancing himself.
Yeah, and then he's just like, distance. Because at the end of the movie, like, nothing is learned.
Mm.
And they cut a bunch of shit, because I accidentally clicked the wrong thing, and instead of renting it on demand for $4, I spent $16.
What?
Yes.
Oh, you shouldn't have spent that on anything.
Charged me $16 because they had deleted scenes at the end of the credits.
Oh, that's a good pizza or something else, man.
Oh, I'm so pissed, yeah, man.
That made it even worse. That's too bad.
Do you know how closely it followed the comic?
That's a good question. How well did it follow?
No, not at all. So I looked up some of the characters, and I don't think it followed the comics hardly at all.
That's weird. I think the first one seemed to a little bit, you know, generally.
There's a scene in the movie where the character from the first movie, the Red Mist that hates Kick-Ass,
yeah,
the son of the mobster that Kick-Ass ends up killing at the end of the first movie. Mark he Strong, wants revenge yeah. on Kick-Ass. It's all he cares about is getting revenge on Kick-Ass. So he wants – first he tries to be trained, and then he just keeps getting his ass kicked by the people he hired to train him. He's like, fuck this. My superpower is money. Who wants to kill people for me?
Yeah.
And so he creates a supervillain group. And when he finds out that Kick-Ass is going around with a superhero group, he gets really pissed and starts targeting them. Well, once he finds out that Kick-Ass kind of has a girlfriend, he shows up at her place, captures her, and then says, now it's time for you to feel what it's like to have a villain's penis in you.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
And then one villain is holding her down.
No, that's terrible.
And he can't do it. Like, he's too much of a, he's too scared.
This is dude from Superbad who played.
Superbad. This is McLovin.
McLovin, right. Yeah.
In a S&M supervillain costume.
Great.
And he's, you know, going to have sex with Kick-Ass's girlfriend. Essentially, he's going to rape her, right?
Right.
And then he can't.
Yeah.
Because he says he's not in the mood, but he can't bring himself to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's crazy. Like, how was that in the comic? And no, I never heard about it. So I go to look up a scene from the comic. Like, I went Kick-Ass to, like, rape scene or whatever. And all I got was an image that it represents kind of the big face-off at the end. And Kick-Ass says, you raped my girlfriend, dude. And the villain says, she wasn't even your girlfriend. She barely knew you. So I guess in the comic, the rape happened.
It's just implied.
It just couldn't. I don't know if they showed it or if it just happened.
Yeah.
They couldn't put it in the movie, so... But either
weird.
Way, it's like, I don't think Millar or Miller, whatever, however you pronounce his name, I don't think he put it in either, except for, I'll just put a rape in there. Why not? Why not? It's just... man.
Yeah.
And if they make a movie out of that, Nemesis, did anyone read Nemesis?
No.
No, I read, what's the other one before this one, that the Angelina Jolie thing?
Wanted.
I read that. I read that.
That book was terrible.
I didn't love it.
It had a big F you to fans at the end of it. And then the movie ditched everything about the comic.
Yeah.
Except for Secret Organization of Assassins. Yeah. And the movie was great.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I saw part of it. But never the whole thing. Because I didn't like the book enough where I went, I'm not going to like the movie. Probably. But maybe that's a case of where they deviated.
Anyway,
and it was better.
I recommend to avoid any Mark Miller books.
All right, so there you go. What to watch and what to avoid. Fantastic. I read a bunch of old stuff, and here's why. A lot of paper things, because while I usually go digital, we moved. And in the move, you end up finding stuff, just going through old boxes you forgot you had. And I found a bunch of comics I forgot completely about, a bunch of early Image stuff and things just prior to Image from Marvel, and just all this weird stuff I was into, and it was bringing back all these memories about what I was reading, why I loved it then, and so I started reading a lot of it, and eventually I got to my big, giant Calvin and Hobbes and Farside collections, and all my old Mad magazines, and I started leafing through all that stuff, and man, I recommend that. Like, just get some old stuff, whatever it was that you used to just love, and if you're too young to have that yet, well then, hang on, because it's coming, but like reading all these old Mort Drucker things from Mad Magazine. He was my absolute idol at the time, and Jack Davis and everybody else. And I just love that stuff. The Farside collections totally hold up. Probably one of the biggest influences on me, period, was Gary Larson. And then the Calvin and Hobbes books are just insane. And they're the big, heavy ones. And I pulled those out and we went through those, and I'm just loving it. So I recommend doing that. Also catching up on The Walking Dead. I'm way behind the comic, that is. And wow, that mid-season finale, by the way. Jeez Louise.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, they really reset that thing and put it on parody, I feel like, with the comic at that point of the story. Mm-hmm. It's weird how they did that, because they've deviated so much. They kind of branched and went blah in these 30 different directions as the comic or as the show has gone on.
Oh.
And then it all went right back to a point where you pretty much walked away with the exact same circumstances you were left with at that point.
That was
in the book.
True.
That was weird, because I was like, where?
Yeah.
I was watching it happen, going, "Oh, this is where we're at."
Yeah,
like, I wasn't sure where we were anymore.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird because of the whole thing with the governor and all that stuff. Without spoilers, yeah. I think people should see it. But I thought that episode was really well done. But they basically reset everything back to kind of where it was in the comic at that point, post prison. And not in the same way, not everybody got out the same way or in the same way, but you're kind of left with the same result. And I think that's interesting just moving forward. You know, you still have characters who didn't exist in the comic and things like that, but for the most part, they now have an opportunity to kind of go from there again if they want to.
Yeah, and I think there's things they just couldn't have really done on TV in good taste.
Oh yeah,
and,
for sure.
And they got around it, and you're right, they're kind of at that same exact
especially point that now. Last bit with him and the kid. And who, by the way, this is the first time I was like, man, this father-son thing is really working for me right this second. Like up till then, you're just like, Carl, get away from me. You're just irritating me every time you're on screen. But kid kind of brought the gusto there at the end.
It makes me want to go get my 2-year-old and hand him a revolver.
Yeah, dude. Teach him now. Some stuff. Teach him now. I don't know. I just recommend going through some of your old stuff. It's been fun to do that. And we've been so busy with the move and then trips and then back and then eye surgery and all this other crap going on. I just didn't have time to do much new, but it's fun to go through your old stuff. Mark, what are you digging into?
A couple of things. I like to keep up with my Spidey. And the problem is if you get sick and get busy for a little while, that stuff comes out like... I guess when I'm keeping up with it, I don't think about it. But if I miss maybe a month or two, I don't realize how many books behind I am.
Yeah.
like the release frequency of that book is crazy. So I'm reading Superior Spider-Man, and actually reading it in a nice fat chunk like that was really good. It gave me a good chunk of the story. For anyone who's reading it, this may be a little spoilery just in general because I don't know how to not do that. Yeah. You know, Doc Ock is doing his thing as Superior Spider-Man. There's not nearly as much Peter Parker influence, which is something I complained about before, because I'm like, you know, if you're out of the book, let's just see what happens with Doc Ock. I don't need whiny Peter, you know, blue spirit Peter Parker in the background.
Right.
So he's not there anymore, and we're actually experiencing this experiment of what would it be like if Doc Ock was Spider-Man and had to deal with Peter Parker's life. And it's kind of falling apart for him because he can't keep that, like, evil desire for power, even if it's under the umbrella of doing things that are, you know, quote unquote good. It's interesting to watch how his character is dealing with it, and in the Spider-Man costume essentially turning Spider-Man into something that everyone's going, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right, you know. Something's wrong with this guy. They're doing some pretty cool things with it. Venom just showed up, which was kind of cool. I just think it's an interesting move. It's something I haven't seen before, where Peter Parker is dating a little person. Yeah. And it's not until it's been going on for a while, but it's maybe 6 issues in now that she's been a character. And this is the first time they've even really brought attention to it in terms of, like, she has to meet Aunt May, and there's a little awkward scenario with Aunt May about who she is and what she is. And that's the only time that's really been addressed. And I just thought it was handled really well in that way, as part of the story.
Yeah. Comics trying to be socially, in the forefront, you know.
Yeah, in a sense, and done well, because they could botch that stuff up and really, you know,
throw it
in your face. A lot of times when she's drawn, you can't even necessarily tell based on the perspective. She's just actually an attractive woman, and that's all you could see from that particular panel. So,
right.
Really well done. Enjoying that. The other thing is, because 'tis the season, I like to find something Christmassy to read in comic books when I can. So every year I just try to find something. I mean, there's so much stuff that I haven't read. It's easy to find things. I read Marvel Zombies Christmas Carol, but I only read the first. It's a one of 5. And have anyone actually read this?
Is this a Kirkman thing from back in the day, or what was?
No,
what was
this is written by Jim McCann.
Oh wow!
So
a few years old.
Well, it's 2011.
Oh, newer than I thought then.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Is it straight up, like, you know, Ichabod Crane style? Like, hey, I'm like, are they riffing on the Christmas Carol idea? And
yeah,
all that?
Yeah, they are totally. It's really the whole Ebenezer Scrooge story, and I'm only an issue in, but it's basically the same story with the one additional thing is because of how Scrooge is and the sort of evil that he's done with his life. What it's resulting in is the undead essentially taking over.
Did I say Ichabod Crane? What the hell's wrong with
you?
Me?
Did, but that's
I think
okay.
You did.
I apologize. I don't know where that came from. Keep going.
Wait a minute, guys. Ichabod Crane, Ebenezer Scrooge matchup.
Finally, who's going to win?
I'd pay money. All right,
yeah, so there's this whole zombie element that's actually interwoven in a way that's not bad. Like, if you didn't read the original story, it's not so far off from the original tale of why the spirits are coming back to Ebenezer to, you know, to go through this process. But they need his help to get out of it. It's his money that could fix the problem here. But basically, it's just zombies taking over the place. And as he's going through, like, it seems like as he's going to go through the journey with the three ghosts, there's going to be more of the zombie stuff tied into it and why that's happening. But it's not completely bastardizing the story. There's enough of the story that's still intact. It's still happening. It's just got this thing added onto it that's involving the zombies. Yeah. So far, one issue in, I actually just wanted to read it for the show, but I'm going to go and get the other four. It actually looked like it was pretty good.
That's cool. I like it. I know people are sick of zombies, but I'm not. I like this stuff.
No, and this isn't hit you over the head zombie stuff either. This is actually, it's well drawn, really nicely integrated. Yeah. And the last thing is I, because again, the whole Christmas thing, I read one of those Marvel magazine, Christmas magazine things that they put out once in a while.
Yeah.
It was just shit. it's exactly what I go to it for. I wasn't expecting it to be great, but it's like four short stories that are just garbage. So I still will probably read another one next year, but I can only take one of those.
It's a Christmas miracle right there.
Totally.
Steven, you got a hell of a list here.
I do, but it's a lot of stuff that I've just been reading over the last couple of weeks. Picked up the new Doc Savage number one, came out this week. I'm a big Doc Savage pulp fan, written by Chris Roberson. It's okay. I'm interested. I'm going to be doing an interview with Chris later tonight where we're going to do a kind of a director's commentary. And so it'll be interesting to get his insight as we go through page by page on that. But if you're a Doc Savage fan, I think you'll enjoy picking this up.
That'll be on the Major Spoilers podcast, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow it should be up. Yeah.
Great.
Awesome. I also read this week Justice League 3000, number one. And I think you can just take Scott Kurtz's commentary from earlier in the show and plug it in here. It's a whole lot of meh, really. It's really not that good, and it seems forced and contrived. And
it's too bad. Is that intended to be a big, long thing, or is this a short series?
Well, apparently it is the replacement for the Legion of Superheroes series that they canceled.
Okay.
And it's not very good.
All right.
I am rereading DC's 52, that weekly series from 2006, and I really enjoyed that series a lot. Mm. I think if there was one series that kicked my fanboy into high gear, it would be DC 52. Mm. I did not watch, speaking of things watching, I did watch the Wolverine, the new Wolverine movie that was just released on iTunes a couple of weeks ago.
Did you watch the unrated one? I heard that thing is just full of F-bombs and lots of blood.
Yeah, there's lots of blood in it. I didn't hate it, but I also fell asleep in like the last 20 minutes of it.
Oh, crap.
And woke up in the last like 5 minutes of the movie. But I didn't miss anything, apparently, in those 20 minutes.
That whole story is basically Superman 2, I realized later on. It's the same story. Let's strip him of his powers and have to get him back. May as well be beating up guys in a bar and then losing and then having Lois nurse you back to health. They may as well have just done that.
Yep.
Anyway.
I also watched Two Guns, which is based on a comic book from IDW Publishing, and it was not bad. I mean, it's got Marky Mark and Malcolm X in it. What's his name?
Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington. And it is not a bad movie. It is a kind of a buddy cop.
I heard that was really fun.
It's really good. People should go check it out. It's not bad.
I like that kind of movie anyway. I'm a sucker for it.
Afterlife with Archie 1 and 2, you guys have to get and you have to read.
Okay.
It's just zombie apocalypse invading Riverdale, and it is not tongue-in-cheek. It is dead serious. It is not.
Let's do it for next show.
Yeah, I think we will. Is it just the two issues? Is that all that's out?
Third issue comes out either next week or the week after. Okay, so you'll have three issues.
Maybe we'll get all three by the time. Yeah, that'd be great. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I didn't watch that I was really interested in watching was the Calvin and Hobbes documentary. But then I saw Scott go off on Twitter about it, and I have not yet been able to bring myself to watch it. And
you
Scott,
seem
please,
displeased. Yeah, what happened?
Please
there?
Tell us why this is not a good movie.
Hey, Scott, give us one more big rant, baby.
No, you've got it in you. Come on.
One more.
I actually talked to John Glenn, who is in the movie, this weekend about it. It's not a terrible movie. It's just a little too long. And the reason why it's too long is that I guess the premise of the movie is that Calvin and Hobbes is really awesome, which I don't think we needed a documentary about.
Right.
But
seems like a given, right? A little bit of a given.
Yeah. It basically is interviews a bunch of people, some interesting, some not, most not, about Calvin and Hobbes and why it's so endearing. The people that he interviewed that were not very interesting made me upset because it's boring and unnecessary. And then a couple of them are just downright frustrating for me. I have a very strong opinion about Bill Watterson. Bill Watterson gave us the best 10 years of his life, right? Like, I mean, he was, I mean, he's a genius. Like, he's a cartooning genius.
Yeah. He gave us all levels, writing.
He gave us 10 years of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
And then he decided, I'm out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whether I agree or disagree, he's done.
Yeah.
And he was not just out. I mean, like, he is, you're never going to see me or talk to me again. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go live in the woods.
I'm just going to go paint in the woods
yeah. and live deliberately and buy a horse and go in the woods and not bother people.
Right.
And so every once in a while, someone gets a hair up their ass to bother him or get a hair up their ass to write a book about him because he's not going to come out. He's not going to say anything. And I just want people to leave Bill Watterson alone. And just like every comics blogger, all right, now hold on a second. I should be careful because there's a comic blogger. just like every comics blogger secretly harbors a desire to write comics.
Nah.
I know. You're the exception that proves
it. I am the exception. Yep, exactly.
every documentary guy that writes their love letter to a certain person is hoping they're the one, you know, they're going to be the Ed Wood, as Brad Geiger says, that brings Bela Lugosi back to everyone.
Right.
Except no one needs to bring Calvin and Hobbes to anyone. No one needs to introduce Bill Watterson to anyone. But such a good portion of this movie was about this guy, this young guy that made the movie and what it meant to him. And no one gives a shit.
Mm.
Like, there's one scene where he shows you his old room. And he shows you an empty wall, and he's like, this was full of Calvin and Hobbes strips. Who cares, man?
There's actually a lot of time spent in that room where it was showing you stuff about his childhood that didn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah. You're my G.I. Joes.
If he was Bill Watterson, it might mean something to me. But
sure,
it,
but it's just – but there was a couple really great scenes in it.
The Breathed stuff I thought was really interesting.
The Breathed stuff was great. Stefan Pastis's discussion is about why he probably didn't merchandise thing was brilliant.
Really interesting, yeah.
But so really what this
– like,
yeah. It just needs to be edited down then.
Well, there was a lot of back padding, like just a whole lot of talk about why he's so great, and then they would have an interstitial thing with this guy driving and thinking and talking, and then a ton more of these interviews about why he's so great.
With like his friends.
Yeah, it's weird.
So it should have been like a 40-minute movie then.
It should have been.
Probably.
Scott, did you notice how like – all the shots were set up so there was something Calvin and Hobbes behind everybody that was clearly planted there.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. There were a lot of these interviews had a book that looked that was supposedly, you know, just back there or whatever.
Yeah, like these guys. And then there's this one scene where it's like he's driving, he's talking about Calvin and Hobbes, and it cuts to like this guy, and he's like, you hear this voice, and he's like, well, you know, Calvin and Hobbes. I opened up the paper, and I'm like, wow, who's this guy? And then it shows the guy walking up to his house, and it's like, in Wisconsin or something. Like, wow, what was his house? Then the door opens and his dog runs out. And it freeze frames the dog and says his dog's name is Calvin. And you're like, wow, fucker named his dog Calvin. Who is this guy? He must be really important. And then he goes, and then I opened up the paper and there was this strip. And that was the first time I discovered Calvin and Hobbes, the very first Calvin and Hobbes strip. And here it is. And it says, John Dickhole, owner of the Calvin and Hobbes fan site. And you're like, what the fuck? That was 20 minutes.
Yeah. They padded it a lot. There's no question about it.
But the thing that annoyed me the most was that he interviewed this guy that wrote a book.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
About Calvin and Hobbes, who thinks he is like the most amazing person on the planet. And they show him at a book signing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm screaming in my office. I'm like, what the fuck? Why is this guy signing books about how he wishes Bill Watterson had not retired? It's like he went to a bookstore and said, hey, do you guys do signings here? Yes, we do, sir. Familiar with Calvin and Hobbes? Yeah. Well, I can't get you that guy. But I can get you the guy that wrote the book about why you can't get that guy. Sign his name on his book. And then at one point, you're interviewing him, and he's sitting in this room that looks like it's like a mahogany room with all these – and he's got his fingertips touching like he's a fucking Proust scholar. And he's like, shut the fuck up. You've done nothing.
I knew you wouldn't like that guy. Oh. You wouldn't like that guy. I can, on a positive side, the things I got out of it, because I watched it with my kids, was just the kind of the wonder of, hey, a cartoonist can have this impact. He can have, this can be this magical medium where you affect these lives, and maybe there's this weird, he's a little bit weird, but that's okay because the work he gave us is timeless and you can always go back to it. The overall theme of that, I think, is a good one, and it lands on young ears well, and I think it even has the ability to introduce new people to his work. But I agree with you. Way too strung out, way too padded out. And yeah, that guy was really annoying.
Well, then maybe then some point in the future I'll sit down and watch it. But for now, I think I still need to keep my distance.
Yeah.
What you need to do is this. What you need to do is wait for the film script that Dave Kellett is making about syndicated comics, because it is going to be amazing.
Pretty stoked about that.
I backed the Kickstarter, and Dave's a friend. But part of one of the Kickstarter extras, and I paid for all the extras, was some of the Kickstarter reward tiers were that you got all the unedited footage. Mm. Oh, and cool. He just released to backers the whole unedited interview with Jim Davis, just the whole hour and a half he spent talking to Jim Davis.
Yeah.
The most fascinating – and I'm into comics, so I'm a cartoonist too. Jim Davis is the reason why I'm a cartoonist, so – I'm biased, but just amazing and poignant and important to anyone who loves comics. And it's from the word of the mouth of the guy making the comics, not the kid that made the fan club.
Right.
It's really good. And then another documentary I watched, and I don't know how I got to watch it because I didn't understand it. I saw them advertising it.
Oh, the image thing.
Said, the image thing. And it said, this will come out in a couple months. So I paid $9 and then I got an email saying, here it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the guy knows me and knows that I once had an image book and maybe gave me the link early, but the Image Revolution documentary is a fucking amazing, man.
Yeah, I want to see it.
So good.
I totally want to see that. When's that? I was looking at the site. That thing's not even like released yet, right? You know, like an early copy or something? Out.
I paid $9 for it on the site and got a link immediately. I don't know why. I'm trying to figure out, maybe I backed the Kickstarter and
maybe.
I don't remember.
I need to get, I really want to see that. I was so into that. So
It's crazy. Their story is fucking nuts, man.
Yeah. Lots of Lee Field in there, right? Doing his, that guy's a machine when he talks about that time. Say what you want about his art, but
they get into everything.
Yeah.
And it's so inspiring.
Yeah. I interviewed McFarlane twice, and he is one of the most interesting dudes I ever talked to. But I always felt like when we talk about Image stuff, I always felt like he was holding way back, like way, way back on details, and it was a lot of generalizations and stuff. So yeah. I'm hoping this thing really kind of opens that up, because I'd just love to know what happened.
I think it does. It's great. Man, it's worth the money. Wow. It's worth the money. It made up for the Watterson documentary.
Wow.
Really great.
Dear Mr. McFarlane, there you go. excellent. Well, there you go, everybody. We got a couple emails. I'm gonna rip through these real quick. Josh Augustine, listener of the show, friend of the program, wrote in, says, hey guys, awesome work on the show. I've mostly been reading DC Comics for the past couple of years, and they've recently passed their 2-year anniversary of the New 52. I think Steven's been reading, but I'm not sure if the rest of you have. So if so, what's your, Steven specifically, your favorite change or new character that has popped up in the New 52 so far? What do you say to that before I finish?
You know, that's rough. I really did like All-Star Western. I thought that was really, really good. I haven't read that in a couple of months. Batman, Scott Snyder's Batman, is really good. Yeah. And I've liked the changes that they've incorporated, especially what's going on with Zero Year. But to be honest, after about the first 8 months, I got so busy that I've just not picked up a lot of the New 52 stuff. Mm. And it just, some of it's not even appealing to me. I really honestly believe that I've moved away a lot from Capes and Tights. And more into, give me character stories, give me things that aren't related to superpowers, but are still in the visual form of comic books. So I wish I could say that every book from the New 52 is great and that every book from Marvel is great, but I've only really been reading All-Star Western and Batman from DC in the last couple of months.
He really likes All-Star Western, Constantine, and he likes the new weird Phantom Stranger. It's actually reincarnated Judas Iscariot that talks to God in puppy form. That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josh. What was I going to ask about? Oh, did they do a Cyborg series as part of the New 52, or is Cyborg still woefully
undersupported? Cyborg is still Cyborg. He's there. He's part of the Justice League.
Right.
So he's doing his thing, but like he did not have a Cyborg story.
I remember one old book from I don't know how long ago, way forever ago in my life, that I read that was my first exposure, and I ended up just absolutely freaking loving that. So every time he crops up in anything, I get excited. So I was just curious. Maybe, I don't know, I'll have to dig around, see where I can get my Cyborg fix these days. Got one here from Matt Dent. Where's Harvey Dent? And he says, hiya. I'm super disappointed you guys haven't talked about this great new series from Image, Hickman and Dracota. Combines sci-fi and a Western in a very unique way. The art alone is worth the $3.50 per issue, and the story is phenomenal. If you haven't been reading it, you should. So there's a recommendation from a listener, Hickman and Dracota.
But what's the name of the book?
Dracota. Hickman and Dracota combined. Those are the creators. Oh, he didn't say, did he?
No.
Oh, well, what the H? Let me look at it,
because Hickman's doing a lot of books.
I was thinking it was Hickman and Dracota was the name of the thing. Hold on.
Yeah,
I can tell you real quick here, too. They are making, East of West.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
Yeah, so have I. But I haven't had a chance to read it.
Yeah, me neither. So maybe we'll have to check that out. I'll put that in my notes here. Cool. I guess nobody's read that, right? Around this here table, this virtual table that we've set up here? No? Nobody? Great. All right. Well, we're going to read it then, Matt Dent. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Give our best to your brother, Harvey. Let's move out. Let's get out of here.
Harvey Dent. We trust him?
thank you, everybody, for joining us. Fantastic show today. Thank you guys very, very much. Let's go around the table real quick and make sure people know what's happening in our lives. Mark, you got anything cool happening in the Wood Whisperer front? Your book's out now, yeah?
It is, yeah. And not only that, but we are just about done with our charity drive, and we're trying to raise $10,000 for cancer care, and we are nearly there. So we've got a couple more days to tally up the final things, get all the corporate money in, and we should probably have no problem hitting $10,000.
That's awesome, dude.
Excellent.
Yeah, nice. It's good stuff.
I thought about you the other day, dude. I there's a website called uncrate.com that has all these kind of like men's shopping stuff, cool gadgets and cool things. And there was like a $17,000. They always put stuff on there that's crazy that you would never know, like a car.
Right.
It was this amazing woodworking tool set. Just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It's like $17,000. And I thought,
No kidding. I have to check it out. But yeah, if you want to catch up on what's going on with the charity, go to woodworkersfightingcancer.com, and we have everything there. We try to update the total, but it's a little bit behind.
Right.
But you can keep up with the latest. You could donate there if you're interested in doing that. You don't have to be a woodworker to donate. It's everybody gets cancer, so you'd be willing to help out.
Right.
I don't mean everyone will get. I mean everyone.
Everyone gets cancer.
Everyone could.
Merry it's Christmas. Inevitable.
You get cancer and you get cancer. Yeah, exactly.
Slightly depressing way to end the show.
Sure. Yeah. No problem. It's all good. Woodworkers, don't forget. They're gonna be the ones you want around when the zombies come. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Scott Kurtz, anything of note? Table Titans doing well, all that kind of stuff.
Man, I'm just an angry, angry man. I'm just mad at everything. Fuck everything. No one makes anything as good as me.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Scott.
feverything.com, where you'll find commentary on all the other things that are broken in this world.
Table Titans, man. And tabletitans.com. We just wrapped up our first season. We're showing production art for season 2.
Yeah.
Stamaker's going to be helping us and joining our creative team with...
I am so stoked about that, by the way.
Dude, Hammaker is the fucking bomb.
He's the best. Yep.
Flew up to Seattle, and we had such a fun weekend. We just sat around brainstorming and plotting, and it felt like every old session of D&D when everyone's just sitting around the table talking about their characters.
Yeah,
and all.
Dude.
Yeah. God, it was so much fun. Yeah. I'm so stoked about season 2. But
Steve, good people.
You can read the whole story. All of season 1 is – you can read it front to back for free at tabletitans.com. And PvP fans, coming the beginning of the year, we're going to kind of – we've been tentatively calling it a soft reboot. But basically, PvP is 15 years old, and it's scary for new people. It's a lot to digest. Mm-hmm. So beginning January 1st, we're going to kind of make – what in comics they would call a great jumping on point. so if you're new to PvP and you just don't know how to get through 15 years of continuity, We're going to try to make things a little bit easier for you with a new jumping on point in January.
That's
so great. Stay tuned for that.
I was hoping you were going to say we're going to redo every strip we ever
start
did.
In the beginning. Yep. I hate that art. Just going back and I don't need no ideas. Let's just start in 1998. It's going to be Diablo. <Why not>?
That sounds awful. Don't do that.
No.
Great. Very cool. And as always, Steven, there's plenty going on at Major Spoilers. Anything in particular you'd like to
This weekend we're doing a free live stream. We normally reserve that for our members, but we're doing that because of the holidays so people can join in and talk Saturday morning with us about, I don't know, Saturday morning things, cartoons, whatever. And we also have some big things coming in January. So it is that time of the year for people to make big changes. You're doing big changes, Scott. And
gosh.
And I've got Mark's woodworking book sitting here. So
cool.
Awesome. It's worth picking up.
Yeah. Go build a thing now, Steven. What are you doing?
I was like, hey, wife, why don't we get the Art Easel project that Mark's doing and do it for the little kids? And then she was like, yeah, that's really awesome. But you know, they don't like drawing up on an easel. They like drawing flat on the table. So we decided to abandon it. I know.
What's wrong with your kids, man?
Yeah, get on that, will you? Fix those kids. There is a lot going on in my world. We are Tom Merritt and I. Tom Merritt, by the end of this month, will no longer be employed at Twit, at the Twit Network, and is jumping out doing some independent stuff. One of those things is a relaunch of the Current Geek podcast with me, which we're excited about because it also involves a lot of other Frog Pants people and friends of the network who will come on and guest and be a part of our new weekly show, which should air the first weekend in January. And that should be the same week that I get to move everything into the new studio and do all that proper as well. So there's a lot of very exciting things happening that way. George Takei is printing one of my comics in his upcoming book. So that's exciting.
What?
Watch for that.
Whoa.
That's awesome, dude.
Super stoked about
that. Holy shit. Really?
Is it Admiral Snack Bar?
It's the Admiral Snack Bar business. He tweeted it the other day, and I kind of knew this was coming, but they asked for official permission, and I've been working with them on that and trying to get an interview, but he's so busy, that may not happen. But the printing part will, so I'm super stoked about that. So watch for that. I've got some of my favorite comics in calendar form up on the store now, frogpants.com/store, currentgeek.com for the new show, and there's a billion other things. So just go to frogpants.com and you'll find out what's going on in and around my world.
Can I say something positive quick before we wrap up?
Yeah.
I know that we don't do this as often as we'd like to. And I know a lot of times it's been hard for me to make it to the show and stuff, but the response we get on Twitter whenever we announce a new show coming up, it's pretty awesome.
They flip out.
They really like this show, and I gotta tell you, man, I really dig it. And I'm kind of down on comic bloggers, but I really dig Major Spoilers.
Thank you.
I stand at you and your family.
Oh, thanks,
and Mark,
man.
I guess Wood's cool.
Yeah, Wood's all right.
I like Wood every morning.
He'll say that. Kidding. Yeah, he'll say that until I'm saying when the zombies come, Mark's the guy you want to have in the house.
I can get shit done.
Oh, man. We're all screwed, but he's going to fix it. He's here to save us all.
You wait till I build you a fancy custom comic book like drawer thingy. You're going to be so excited about
it. Save us?
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to save us.
You know, it's going to be like an artist playing Pictionary where you're trying to make it perfect and someone draws a circle and then the team member goes, a cat, and we never win. You're not going to just put a board up on the door. You're going to be like, no, this has got to be a dovetail joint. We're like, just get it locked down, dude.
It just needs to keep the snow out. No. Where's the mahogany?
Yeah, where is the mahogany, damn it? That's a great question in general. Well, we'll leave you with that, folks. Thanks for joining us. I concur with what Scott says. We'd love doing the show, and we are trying to get it more regular. And I think with the new studio being done and the new year coming, I think we can probably arrange that. But in the meantime, please join us on the web. Go to comicdorks.com. That's where you can find all the archives to the show, links to forums, store, everything else. It's all right there. Email us, comicdorks@gmail.com. We'll be happy to read your emails on the show. And follow us on Twitter, @comicdorks, more at frogpants.com. Just like this show. We'll see you guys next time.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.